You're a runner. From the starting line to the finish line, you know that every breath and every step is a gift. You train hard and always welcome a new challenge. When the training gets tough, you stay focused and committed to your goals. You are strong, healthy, fast. Now you are ready to take your training to the next level. Hey, endurance athletes, welcome to episode 41 of the Freedom to Run podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Hafes. Most people don't typically think of competitive eating and endurance sports at the same time, but Yasser Salem competes at a high level in both, and sometimes both take place at the same time. Yasser ran his first marathon in 2010 with his wife, and now they make running the New York City Marathon an annual tradition. He is also an avid cyclist and triathlete. He learned how to swim in 2012 and finished his first Ironman in 2013 and is now a four-time Ironman finisher. Yasser is also the number 12 ranked competitive eater in the world, as ranked by Major League Eating. He once ate 47 ears of corn in 12 minutes and has competed in the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest 5 times. This talent has helped him to be a 3-time Donut Derby champion and a 10-time Tour Day Donut champion. In my conversation with Yasser, he goes into detail on these events along with the unique training approach needed for endurance sports and competitive eating. Now, here's my conversation with Yasser. Hey Yasser, thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks, Jeremy. Great to be here.
Hey, I'm excited to hear what you have going on with this unique dynamic that you don't see a whole lot in endurance athletes, runners, or triathletes, of where you're a passionate endurance athlete, love cycling, but you're also a competitive eater and obviously and ranked in the top in the world. How did that come about?
You know, it was all an accident and kind of like a fluke. I dabbled in competitive eating in 2008 because I really just wanted to. I saw the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest on TV, and I thought, well, that's a fun little project for me to do, and I just wanted to do it once. I thought it would be easy, and I could just dedicate a little bit of time to it, and all of a sudden I would be on stage at ESPN. But I can tell you, it's extremely difficult, and just like anything else, where you know, there's only a select few that can be up on the main stage. It's very hard. So like it took me several years of dabbling, actually 4 years, before I actually made it to the main stage. And what happened was, is my wife got a brain tumor, and then she had to have brain surgery back in 2009 late 2008. And you know that kind of spurred a different project. Like, I forgot about this whole competitive eating thing for a second, and you know, there was more important things, obviously. And what we did is, after she was recovering from brain surgery, we both sat down and thought, like, you know, what is something that she really wants to do to kind of like get back in the game after having such a difficult medical situation. When we decided, we both had never done a marathon before, and we made a goal for like just a little over a year from, you know, surgery, we would go ahead and you know, train and get ready for the New York City Marathon. And when we did it, we were at it in 2010. When that happened, it really inspired me, seeing her going from, you know, brain surgery to a marathon runner. And there is a story about this on StoryCorps or NPR. You can have a look, see anytime. Just look my name up and look up on NPR, and you'll see that experience inspired me to look at what are things that I should, or I wanted to do, and I never got around to doing. And that was first and foremost, this getting back to the competitive eating thing. It was supposed to be a funny thing, and I was like, you know what, I'll just give it another shot. And I tried, and I got onto Nathan's, but I thought of even like more substantial, bigger things. And I never learned how to swim back when I was a kid, and it was a little bit of an embarrassment for me, and I wanted to really fix that. But I wanted to be for a reason, and that was, the reason was not just to learn how to swim, but the goal was for me to do a triathlon. And so I did my first triathlon, New York City Triathlon, in 2012, so a couple of years after that. And then everything just kind of snowballed from there. This idea of a project, some stuff that we want to do, both my wife and I, we sit down and we plan this thing out every year in December. First it was the marathon, and then next it was Nathan's, and then learn how to swim and do the triathlons. And we haven't stopped since. That's kind of like a tradition thing that my wife and I do, is we figure out projects that we want to do and we do them. So it's kind of hard to say that's how I didn't really start a traditional way of into competitive eating, just decided and did the plan. It just kind of, it was supposed to be a joke. I was inspired by my wife's marathon. I got back into it, and then a lot bigger things just kind of like went from there.
That's incredible. I didn't know that story about your wife, but it seems like that was kind of the starting point for
really was
for the next years of your life on both the competitive eating side and the endurance sports side.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was pretty magical. And, she's doing a lot better. She ran her first 2010, and we just finished running, I guess, a couple weeks ago now. That would have been her eighth marathon overall. It'll be eighth, but it was the seventh New York City, because, when Hurricane Sandy hit, we didn't run it in whatever that was, 2013. And we ran the Harrisburg Marathon over in Pennsylvania. It was a big year for the Harrisburg Marathon that year, because there were so many people that were planning on running New York City that were looking for the nearest big marathon nearby, and that was Harrisburg was the following weekend. And so that was the biggest Harrisburg has ever been. It hasn't quite gotten to that size. 2013 was its biggest year. It was good. It's a lovely marathon. It's very flat. It's a lot of Boston qualifiers, a lot of PRs there. It's a perfect time of the year. I highly recommend it.
Interesting. Yeah, that 2010, that first New York City Marathon, that probably had to be a pretty special moment, considering what the previous 2 years had been for you guys to cross the line in your hometown there.
It's always a special run for us. It is a big city marathon. There's a lot of magic that goes with the big city marathon, but there are lots of stories like ours. You'll always run into them. You just talk to people. Why are you doing this? Or why are you here? And we volunteer at the New York City Marathon Expo the day before the marathon every year. We hand out bibs, and we always have that 30 seconds or a minute to talk to each person. And there's always something really special about that race. And everybody has their brain tumor type story. It's there. You have to dig in and you find it. I'm always surprised. I love that race. It's my favorite race.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you mentioned your story fits in perfectly to this freedom to run approach that I want this podcast to be, that every step, every breath, every day that we have is a blessing and a gift, and we need to maximize that. And we do it with the things that we love, like running and cycling and doing triathlons.
And the competitive eating thing really is just, it's funny, haha, honestly. And it's just kind of, it just kind of lingered and continued. And it's a fun thing that we kind of do. I kind of continue to do on the side, and it has evolved. And, for me, that's what it means over the past few years. And I'm happy to get into that too.
Yeah. And do you actively train for that? Cause you have to prepare how your stomach reacts to actually in the moment of the competition, right?
Yep. Yeah. So in the same way that a triathlete has to be mindful of every discipline, I have to be mindful because of the path I've chosen is to compete in, long distance running and in triathlon and, in the Tour de Donut stuff, which we will get into, which is basically biking and eating donuts, like combined. It's hilarious. And then also, of course, pure competitive eating. I have to be mindful about how all those parts like fit together. So I'm not training like a pure marathon runner or a pure cyclist. I have to be very careful of how all those things work together. I can't just focus all my efforts on one in training wise, that is, and nutrition wise. It's a very delicate balance. In reality, there's no manual out there for somebody who enjoys doing all those activities together out there. So I kind of had to make it up. And so, yes, to answer your question, I do train for, competitive eating, but it all fits very nicely. I did this interview with Wall Street Journal a few months ago, and it basically outlines what my training is. And I train every day for readiness for competitive eating. But that training also gets me all the nutrition that I need for any race that I'm doing. And I run a marathon every month. So this is what it comes down to. Every lunch of every day, in the weekday, that is Monday through Friday at work, I bring about 4 to 6 pound salad with me to work. And that takes up three of those huge Tupperwares, like Ziploc Tupperwares. They're compartmentalized. So I have about 9 different compartments. I grow my own sprouts at home, alfalfa sprouts or whatnot. Uh-huh. And then, in that salad includes, a pretty big bed of spinach, all those sprouts that I grow, a big handful of olives. I love olives. I eat about 5 pounds every month. And then, one tomato, one big green pepper, one cucumber, 2 carrots, maybe 1 or 2 eggs. And then an avocado. The avocado egg ratio depends on how I feel. I might do 2 avocados and 1 egg, or 2 eggs and 1 avocado. It's just depending upon how much fat and protein I want. That's where I play with the macros there. And then I have about a tablespoon and a half of MCT oil, and then like as much balsamic vinegar as I want. It's just kind of whatever I feel like, or apple cider vinegar. And then that's it. I eat it all, and then I drink about a gallon of water after that. So the net amount of food there is about 4 to 6 pounds, plus that bottle, that water, that's 8 pounds. So we're talking about 12 pounds of stuff in my stomach at one time. And I eat it. I'm not in a race, but I'm eating it pretty quickly,
Yeah.
But it's also, it sounds pretty wacky, but it's not that far off from, let's say, the Michael Phelps, like amount of food. He eats ridiculous, huge breakfasts. There's bodybuilders in general would do fairly well, like walk-ons onto competitive eating contests, because they just consume ridiculous amounts of food and they down like 2 gallons or 2.5 gallons. So if I was a recruiter for competitive eating and somebody's in bodybuilding or, weightlifting in general, those are the people and they have low body fat. So that helps a lot. Like you don't have a lot of fat, visceral fat in your abdominal area. That helps a lot, not having that there. But yeah, so that's what I basically do. That's my training every day. I eat that. I'm ready. That keeps me ready. Now, ramping up to a really, really big contest like Nathan's, slightly bit different, a little bit more aggressive the month before, and I'm happy to get into that. But like, that's what I do every day. I love eating big salads. It's something I like to do. I'll never get sick of it. A gallon of water on top of it helps me get ready. And for most contests, 12 pounds of capacity is what I call it, will do the trick. There are contests where, you need more capacity, like chili or highly viscous foods where nothing's holding you up in the mouth. It's just like flowing down into your stomach. I tend to shy away from those contests anyway. I don't want to go above like 12 to 14 pounds of capacity. Doesn't quite do it for me anymore. But maybe back when, but not now. So that's it. That's it. That's my cornerstone of my training for competitive eating every day. It's my lunch, my salad.
Interesting. So it works, the volume, but yet also feeds
yeah, all the nutrients and just the overall nutrition that you need in a, just a daily health, but also to feed for your cycling and your running too. So I like that approach, but then you top it off with a gallon of water. Most people don't drink a gallon of water spread throughout the day, but you're having that for dessert on lunch.
Yeah. It might be a little much for most people, but it doesn't put you in any kind of danger. A gallon is just is fine. It's not, if you're going above a gallon and a half, then, you know, I would say don't do that in one sitting, that is. So that's my way around it. It's my safe way of giving everything that I need. It's also, you know, it's just the limit of the amount of water that I'm going to get before it starts getting really taxing on my, you know, work, because I have to, would have to go to the bathroom quite often. But that's like, it's perfect. I love really big amounts of food, and I can't really do that with like meat or dairy or anything like that. It has to be something that's that type of food, whether it's broccoli or cauliflower, something that has substantial like fiber and volume wise. But for me, it's a salad. That's what I like, and it's how it works. And there are other ways of training for competitive eating, but again, I am not a pure competitive eater. I have to think about other parts of my my interests and my hobbies.
Well, and that's kind of a good point to just think about, just for runners and endurance athletes in general, that you've found a way to train that works for you with what you want and your goals. And it might not be the traditional way that other people are doing it, but it works for you and you found some success with it.
Yep. And I wouldn't change it. You know, I am aware of other training methods for, and, you know, nutrition wise and training for people who are pure, you know, marathon runners or pure competitive eaters. And none of those would really work for me.
You made an interesting point before of how maybe the last month before a big competition like the Nathan's, you train a little bit differently. So it's almost you approach that just like a big race day or an Ironman or the New York City Marathon. Yeah. How does that look leading up to a big competition like that?
Yeah. So, the biggest races that I do are these things called the Tour de Donut. And those are these bike races where you race for about 32 to 36 miles, depending upon the race. The oldest ones out in Illinois, in Staunton, Illinois, started by the Boeing Employees Bike Club. And it's been going on for about 30 years now. So there's a bit of a history there. And it started as a spoof of the Tour de France. And so it's a funny little thing. It's a nonprofit group, and, you know, they raise money for scholarship funds. There's a scholarship fund, and they award these scholarships to college-bound kids, which I really like being a part of something like that. So leading up to that, so that particular race out in Illinois, the big one is in July, you know, around the time of when the Tour de France starts. And then the other race, there's one in Ohio, there's one in Austin, there's one in California. There's a Donut Derby, which is basically the same as a Tour de Donut, but it's out in Pennsylvania. That one is in Labor Day. So leading up to that race, I will, any of these races, the Tour de Donuts, which I win every year at this point, since 2014, what I do there is about a month before I'll start to check my weight and make sure that I am where I want to be. I'll check my body fat percentage, make sure I am where I want to be. And I make adjustments there if I need to lose any weight. In those last 4 weeks, that's the time for me to do it, and I start cutting a little bit. What that means is, you know, I'll adjust my macros a little bit, so the fats are a little bit higher, the proteins are medium, and for the most part, you know, I'll cut my carbs down except for vegetables. I'll get my carbs in that way. So I'll cut out, like, you know, pasta and rice and whatnot. But the week before a contest, I'll or a big race like a Tour de Donut, I'll cut out meat and dairy because I just know how my body reacts to that stuff, just so I keep my energy up, and then I'm not sluggish, and I really have to, not to get too graphic, but basically I have to make sure my systems are completely empty, so I'm ready for like the big hit. About 3 days before, I'll reintroduce, I'll basically start carving up, but not with pasta. Pasta doesn't work for me. I want to use as lentils and rice, you know, just sushi in general works for me. That's kind of how it works. And then I'll feel my body out. If I have just enough energy and I feel empty, lots of vegetables, lots of fruit, lots of rice, lots of lentils, those 3 days before are key. And then the meal or two before a big contest, usually, you know, it's in the morning, I'll try to switch over to like pure liquids. So whether it's a protein shake or Ensure or something like that, that I have a good history with, try to make sure that it's dairy free. The morning of the contest, or the race, I'll down a big, gallon of water, just to stretch it out, and warm water. And then I'll sit for a second and then, you know, wait for it about 3-4 hours before a race, just to make sure it's all out of my system. And then I'll drink a really, really strong cup of coffee about an hour after I drink that gallon of water to make sure I have my metabolism is turned up. And then at the same time, I have a little bit of oomph and energy. If I'm feeling a little, depending upon how I feel, I might eat like a soft fruit, like an orange or an apple. Or a banana, I should say, not an apple. And that's it. That's my preparation. A month before, check for weight. Check weight, check fat. A week before, start cutting out dairy, start cutting out meat. 3 days before, carb up. Day before, two meals before, like lunch and dinner, all liquid. And then the morning of, gallon of water and a cup of coffee. And then race, and hopefully everything turns out all right.
That is incredible. I love that. I'd love to just try it. And watching videos of the Tour de Donut, your strategy is to you ride like 36-ish miles, but you have two specific stops where you grab donuts and then you smash a bunch together. Is that how you do it?
Yeah. And that's exactly what I do. I do 6 to 12 donuts depending upon the race, because every donut, this is usually out in, smaller towns where they're helping, they're getting their supply of donuts from the local bakery, which again, I love. I love the nonprofit aspect of like these races, but also at the same time, it's always helping a local business. Some bakeries gets that contract every year and they bake them out. But like, every once in a while they'll have a different bakery, like the one at the Tour de Donut in Ohio, they moved cities because the size of the race grew from when I first started about 620 racers or so, and then it grew to 1200 and then 2000. I think this past year, well over 2000, I think it's 2,500 riders. So these are huge races. So I had to call that bakery ahead of time and say, ask them like, how much do these donuts weigh? Because I have to kind of like have a realistic number to go towards. So some of these glazed donuts range anywhere from like 1.7 ounces all the way up to like 2.3 ounces. The biggest ones are in Illinois, actually. So a donut's not a donut. A glazed donut's not a glazed donut in every Tour de Donut race. You kind of have to be aware of that. So that kind of changes whether I do 6 donuts at a time or 12 donuts at a time. Ideally, I do 12 at a time because I'm very happy to share this, like my strategy, mainly because I want people to be safe and like not shove a bunch of donuts in their mouth without being aware of like what you're doing. I always tell people to take small bites, whether you do 3 or 6 or 12 donuts, just take small bites and have that water nearby, take it down. But the real damage that you're going to do is in the first 3 minutes. So you have to really work against your brain doesn't want to do this. Your body is kind of plays along, but like only for so long, so you have to overcome these, real signals from your body to like, ease up and take a break. So usually 3 minutes is when I do, you know, if I'm doing my record 61 donuts at the Donut Derby in Pennsylvania. Now those are on the smaller side, 1.7 ounce donuts, but like, you know, I'll put down close to 3 dozen donuts in those first 3 minutes. And then stop. Yeah. And that's when, you know, the rest of the race is the entire race depends on those 3 minutes of that first donut stop, in my opinion, you know? And then from there, it's just kind of like, you know, try to have enough recovery time between the first donut stop and the second donut stop to try to do something close to whatever your total goal is going to be. So my goal at Donut Derby was to do 60. And so I did 3 dozen in the first stop and I did 2 dozen in the second stop. So you're never going to do, unless you're superhuman and or you're doing something very different than what I do, the second stops should always be less than probably about 2/3 of what you did in the first stop. But if you learn something, tell me. I'll try to incorporate it. But that's what I found.
That's cool. I've never heard of the Tour Day Donut, but it sounds like a great event and fun and. But you don't only do those type of things. You do, you've done a couple of Ironmans, actually four, is that correct?
Yep. I've done four Ironmans. I didn't do one this year, or last year because I'm focusing, my bigger project right now is to qualify for Race Across America or RAM in 2019. And so I had to make a choice of am I going to do an Ironman or am I going to do a RAM qualifier? And a RAM qualifier is, you know, either a 24-hour time trial where you need to do approximately 400 miles on your bike, or you're doing, you know, a 400-mile race or above, and you have to finish that in 24 hours. So that's been like my focus since last year. I got very close last year. I did a race in North Carolina. I think I did 312 or something like that, or 320 or something in that range. I actually won my age group, surprisingly. And then there's not a lot of racers, by the way. So you start getting in these like ultra distance bike races and there's a lot less people. So anyway, what I'm trying to say is I had to decide last year, am I going to do an Ironman or am I going to do a RAM qualifier? Because, you know, they both wear me out pretty hardcore. So I couldn't do both. So I did another RAM qualifier this year. Didn't turn out quite as I wanted to, but I'm doing another one down in Florida in February. So until I'm out of RAM qualifying territory, which won't be till 2019, the extent of my triathlons over the past couple of years have been sprints. So I've done a few of those in the Northeast. So I do like 2 or 3 sprints a year. And I love those for right now. It satisfies my triathlon needs at the current moment. But I'll hopefully get back into it either late in 2018, once I qualify for RAM, or it'll have to wait till 2019. Yeah.
Sure, 400 miles on the bike in 24 hours. That is some serious mileage.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty nuts. And I've been lucky that I met some of these people who do this stuff, and it's not a lot of people. You'll see them pop up again. And again, it's pretty fascinating to get into their minds, like the true winners of this stuff. So one of my friends that I met over the past couple of years, his name is Andrew Willis. He's out in Austin. You know, he wins this stuff. He wins like No Country for Old Men, which is like, you know, 500 mile bike race. He's done these 1,000-mile bike races, and he kills them. He does them all, and he usually wins them actually. And just getting into their minds is why do they do this stuff? Because it's several levels above Ironman, in my opinion. Like, why do you do this stuff? And not just doing it, but these people win them that I talk to, and like that's an extremely high level of functioning and performance, and it's just, it fascinates me. And it gets down to, some of them will say, not Andrew, but some of them will say, like, I just like the pain, you know, like completely visceral answers that they, you know, they just enjoy pushing themselves to the point where there's no more pushing, you know, they just want to know how far can they go? How far can they push their body? It completely, it blows my mind. I love that. I love meeting these types of people, like they're functioning extremely high level of not just mentally or not just physically, but also mentally, you know?
Yeah. Everybody has their own why, yeah. And it's so unique to, yeah, just the pain or the competition and just challenging yeah. themselves to yeah. see how far yeah. they can go.
Yeah. So my big project, one of my other, I would say smaller project this year was to run a marathon every month. That's just a, I knew that qualifying for RAM was going to be harder than I thought. It was my new Nathan's basically. You know, I didn't do it the first year, although, you know, last year when I wanted to qualify, but, you know, I had really high hopes. I set the bar really, really high. Didn't do it this year, and hopefully I'll do it next year. But what I knew I could depend on is that I can run a marathon. And so I thought, you know what, I'll have this smaller little project going on, which is, you know, run a marathon every month. And it's a pretty, you know, it's a doable goal. There are plenty of people out there that do more than that. I shouldn't say plenty, but there are people who have done multi-marathons out there, and Hal Higdon has a website with training plans that outline, like, you know, multi-marathon in a year type of stuff. And yeah, my little project turned into, I got a lot of pickup in the media, and but in reality the bigger project here is not my marathon every month, it's the qualifying for RAM. So
sure.
Fingers now, crossed.
Yeah. We're closing out the calendar year here. Are you on pace yeah. to get that marathon every month?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I actually ran 12 at this point because I ran an extra one in September because I was unsure. And they were actually back to back, like Saturday and Sunday. And it was, that was because I had this project I was going to go overseas on, and I didn't know if I was going to be able to run a marathon in October. And so I was like, you know, I'm not going to wait and, like, you know, make up for it in November. That would be such a cop out. So I thought, you know, I have to do an extra one in September just to be sure, you know. So I ended up not going overseas in October. I have this extra marathon. So I have one more, and I'm running it in, it's in New Jersey. And you know what? I sat down in December of last year and I like mapped out the 12 marathons that I wanted to do. And, you know, life happens. And those marathons that I had planned, I would say probably about only 70% of them, like maybe eight out of the 12 were the ones that I actually did. So I don't actually register for the marathons anymore until like two or three weeks before, because I might have to shift it. And there's so many opportunities for marathons. Marathons are like basically every weekend and almost any, I mean, around here, like I can find something, you know, within driving distance. You know, I haven't had to fly for a marathon, you know, this year, even with like life happening and having to find something at the last minute. And so my December marathon was not the marathon I was supposed to run. You know, it was like I was going to go out to Delaware. This one, I believe, is in New Jersey, which I've already registered for. I think it's next weekend. I have to look on my calendar, but it's next. It's next weekend. Yeah.
What's been your favorite event? You've got a lot of the marathons. You've done the Ironman. What's been your favorite event overall?
It has to go back to, there's no competition on that. It has to go back to New York City Marathon. It's very special to us because of our story and, you know, and the inspiration, and nothing would have, we wouldn't be where we are without it. I think my wife and I, and, you know, and I wouldn't be inspired to do any of this stuff. I don't think so. I mean, it's just nothing would have happened without that marathon. And it's very special. And then just for like personal fulfillment, other than like that, I think a second spot would be the Tour de Donut circuit in general. because it gives me an opportunity to be the best. I love, obviously, winning. I think that's really fun. But at the same time, you know, the Tour de Donuts in Ohio and in Illinois are really big and storied races. And they both are tied to and the Tour de Donuts in Austin and the Donut Derby in Pennsylvania. They all have like a component to them where they're doing good and they're raising money for charity. The one in Ohio raises money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society for the next race for next year. So these are things that make me happy. I get to have fun and do something really goofy and perform and not feel like it's a selfish thing. It's like it's a fun thing. And no matter, I can be as goofy and promote the heck out of the race and the races in a way. And it's not self-serving. It's for something a little bit bigger and better. So I don't think I could do those races for several years without having a deeper meaning for it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah great. I ate a bunch of donuts. I rode my bike and I won. That's great. That's fun. It really is. But like, there's more to it. You know, it has to be. You know, I could do that for maybe a year or two, and then, you know, it'd get old. No, it's not old at all. It's feel like I'm doing something good. But I think what's important to remember is that I really don't eat donuts. I don't eat like hot dogs like on a daily basis. Nothing against hot dogs or donuts or anything like that, but like it's important to understand there's a time and place for hot dogs and donuts, you know. I think everybody needs to find their hot dog and donut time, you know. For me, it's I eat my donuts when I, you know, I ride these races like 3 or 4 times a year, and that's it. I eat my hot dogs when I'm competing at Nathan's and all the festivities around there. And so if I ate hot dogs and donuts every day, I wouldn't be able to do all the other things that I want to do. You know what I'm saying? So it's just there's a time and place for salads, and there's a time and place for hot dogs, and a time and place for donuts. And I found a way to not overdo it on any of those. I don't think I should eat salads every day. I get sick of them too. But like, I mean, every meal that is. But I do like to eat a salad with variation. Is a daily staple of mine, and it works for me.
Sure, because I'm guessing there's not many salad eating contests. Most of the contests are donuts or pizza or chicken wings or corn.
A lot of that has to do with this sponsors. Other stuff. So yeah, a lot of that in the competitive eating circuit. You have to remember, you know, the big drivers of in the food industry in the United States is you know, you got packaged goods. So you know, you got Nathan's. You have also restaurants. So like Hooters is a big sponsor of the weed eating contest every year. And but I should say there's a farmers cooperative down in Florida. That do the sweet corn eating contest in West Palm Beach. And so that's the contest where in 2015 I set the world record with 47 corn on the cob. No, sorry, 2016. Sorry, it was last year. This year, my friend Carmen Cincotti, who came in second at Nathan's, he broke my record this year. But, you know, I'll get him back. He's a good friend of mine. But, like, I'll get him next year. But – so there's corn, and then there's a kale eating contest that started last year up in upstate New York. That started last year, and it's raw, slightly dressed. That's very difficult contest.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, but that's a healthy eating organization. So it's not without effort that you'll find, you know, these eating contests. And when I say eating contests, I'm sure there are amateur contests that might fit the vegetable and fruit bill, but I'm in the professional league, which is Major League Eating, and those are the only contests I do. You know, the money is better, and also the safety standards are up to par. There's always at Nathan's, for example, there's an EMT for every single eater that's up there, and there's two or three people watching every eater at any time. There's two counters, people are counting, that is, and then a person who's actually tabulating. There's a lot of stuff that goes behind the scenes to get those numbers, you know, turning up on the screen on ESPN, and includes, you know, the safety, you know, the EMT for every single person that's up there. So amateur contests just won't, they don't have the safety standards there. It's basically, I won't go swimming in open water without, a lifeguard or several lifeguards around. So I won't go into an eating contest without that lifeguard there. It's like swimming in open water by yourself. It's not something that I would do or recommend anybody to do.
Wow. Yeah. You watch it on TV and you don't necessarily think of all those details like that. And as you're up there and the countdown is going, or as you're at the starting line to a race, all this training has gone into it. Is there one or the other that gets you more nervous or anxious or excited, or is it kind of a similar feeling?
You know, it would have to be the contest where I have more to lose, like the Tour de Donuts and whatnot. I get a little bit more nervous about it because I am, you know, I have a target on my back whenever I get on that bike, you know, at these Tour de Donuts and Donut Derby bike races. So I get that comfortably nervous state of mind, which is good for me to know that it's there, because I know I have the desire to do it. I think the second that goes away, if I don't have that feeling of nervousness and I can harness it into power or extra urgency to pedal a little bit faster, if I don't have that there, then I would I'd probably have a talk with myself and figure out what, you know, is it time to move on? Thankfully, it hasn't gone yet. The Nathan stuff, I've been doing it for 5 years now. I always want to just do better than what I did last year. I haven't quite cracked the podium yet, the top three. I've gotten close. I've gotten fifth place in previous years. I think I got sixth or seventh this year. Actually, it was sixth. And a little bit different. So, like, I would say it is a little bit more exciting, and I get more nervous at the bike races. And just by the type of – the way that the contest is – or the races are run, like, I'm getting my heart rate up. I'm biking fast, and I can affect the course of my mood a little bit better, because I know what's gonna get my heart rate up or drive it down a little bit. So I'm also a little bit more comfortable in that space that I not just that I have a target on my back, but I also am comfortable. I have that confidence that I can in myself, that I know I can pull it off. I can do well. I give everybody a run for their money in those races. So I would have to say it's the Tour de Donut bike races. And on the opposite end of the scale, when my wife and I run the New York City Marathon, it's for the reason behind it is not to win it. Obviously, we're not going to win the New York City Marathon, but not about time at all. It's just chilling and relaxing and enjoying it and for what it is. It's a special race. Yeah. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And something like the New York City Marathon, I'm sure that's a great time to reflect every time that you run out there.
And it's the perfect time of the year to do that. You know, if it was like March or something, I would think we would be harder to have that introspection.
Yeah. And I always end each episode with three questions, and one is the greatest memory that you have of running, but I think that 2010 and every New York City Marathon might be at the top. But is there another memory that you haven't maybe talked about that you'd like to share?
Yeah, let's see. I mean, I think we talked quite a bit about the Tour de Donuts, you know, the how special it is to me personally and fulfilling, and the emotional connection that my wife and I have to the New York City Marathon. But I ran the Harrisburg Marathon about I ran it several times after my wife and I ran it in 2013. I think I ran about three or four times total. And I ran a 404. It was my fastest marathon. And I remember how good that felt. Like, and I have the fastest I ran this year was 420. So it's straight up 10-minute mile. I felt so good, and I wasn't tired. You know, I felt like I had a little bit more in me, and that race made me realize that it doesn't take a lot to do really well in running. It little levers can change the entire course of a race, whether it's being careful with the amount of water that you take, which I was very careful with, the amount of time I spent at aid stations, and I had a really good pacer, and who I still keep in touch with. He taught me so much in that race alone. I want a race like that again, and I haven't been able to recreate it, but I have faith that next year I'll be able to break the 4-hour marathon. For me, for a lot of people, 4 hours is not that difficult. For me, you know, it's just about getting better from where I was before. So I would say Harrisburg in 2015, I guess it would have been. Running that 404 would be my second favorite memory.
Yeah, I love that approach of just getting better and better. And you mentioned that with Nathan's too, and the competitions of just, hey, if you're sixth place or you're first, just you're trying to be what you did the previous year. And I love that approach.
Yeah. And, you know, having that approach is what got me to the point of finding, you know, my interest in competitive eating, and then my interest in biking, and just Googling until I found like a race that can put those two things together. And suddenly I was the best at something. As goofy as it is, you know, I am the best at, you know, these bike and donut races. It gives me a chance to, you know, at the end of the season or at the beginning of the season to have a little bit of fun, you know, loosen up a little bit. And that's important to remember that not everything has to be so serious. You don't have to keep that 9-minute pace all the time. There's time. It breaks you out of the, at least for me, it breaks me out of the routine of training for marathons and other endurance races. It's for fun, but also does good.
Sure. And what's one life lesson that you've learned from running, cycling, competitive eating?
Never give up, because there's always, especially in the approach that I take, which is always competing against myself and to improve on what I did before, and then at some point, you know, you might become the best at something. But if you never give up and always push yourself just a little bit more than what you think you're capable of doing, that's when you grow. It's not when you stay in your comfort zone, you're never going to run faster. You're never going to bike harder. You're never going to swim with more efficiency. You have to break yourself. You have to get that heart rate up. You have to push just a little bit harder in order to grow. It has to hurt a little bit, and it has to scare you a little bit in order for you to get to the next level.
Yeah, that's so good. And it's easy to slip into a cruise control and comfort zone just do the same day in and day out.
Yeah, can't. You can stay performing at that level. And your body and your mind and your soul needs to like feel a difference, you know, it's not going to be pushed to something if you're not pushing it. You have to initiate your next level by yourself.
Definitely. And What if you came across a new runner or cyclist and they asked for one piece of advice? What would you tell them?
Stay consistent. Always go. Always keep your training schedule. Not 100%. Nobody's 100%. Don't beat yourself up about it, but keep consistent. Put it all in the calendar. You know, that's what I do. You know, when I sit down in December, I calendarize all the races I want to do with, you know, some wiggle room because, you know, things change. But I have my entire training in my Google Calendar and knowing, you know, month to month, whatever race, whatever marathon I'm doing or what big Tour de Dona I'm doing or what competitive eating race or contest I'm going to do. And I have, you know, key periods of training in there, and I make sure I don't miss them, whether it's a long run on Saturday or a long bike ride on Sunday, and consistently going to do my circuit training every weekday during lunchtime. I have that in my calendar. I stick to it as best as I possibly can. It's consistency. You have to stick to it. And it's not just that one race, but try to keep a consistent training schedule throughout the year and have races if possible, whether big or small, to construct your training plans around them so you're motivated.
Love that. And a quote that I've heard before is consistently undertrain and undertrain consistently. And really it's just about doing just something every day. And over time, that's going to get you to your goals. You didn't qualify for the Nathan's contest just in your first year. You didn't make the Ironman in your first year. It took time and consistent training.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, and if anybody can do an Ironman, I mean, if I can do an Ironman, anybody can do an Ironman, because remember, I didn't know how to swim in 2012. And, you know, the following year I did an Ironman, and subsequent years I did three more. And so I'm still not even that comfortable in the water, you know, so I don't really, but you can fight through those fears. Fears are all in your head, and you can overcome them, and you too can be an Ironman.
That is great. And just a great reminder that we can accomplish so much more in life outside of endurance sports if we just commit to it, like you did to learn how to swim, get out there and do a triathlon.
Yeah. So much fun in the world, and there's so many races, and there's so much more than just racing. That's why I bike to work every day. That's why, you know, my wife and I will go on long bike rides on the weekend and explore all the places around New York City. 14, 15, 20, 30 mile bike rides is our idea of a rest day in our weekend. And it all comes from the love of just enjoying what stuff we have around us here, and fitness, of course.
Yeah, that's great. And Yasser, this has been an awesome conversation. I've loved it and loved getting to know you and connecting with you. Yep. And how can people watch what you have going from the competitive eating side and all your cycling and training stuff? How can we follow you?
I post pretty regularly on Twitter at Yasser Salem. It's just my first name and last name. And then also my website, which, you know, is just, again, my first name, last name, YasserSalem.com. I post pretty regularly, at least once a week. I try to post something to the blog. I'll post two or three times a week on social media. And I try to keep the content pretty serviceable. So whether they're race reports, advice about what I learned in a particular race, there should be something there that's useful for everybody. But I'm also happy to answer questions. I try to interact as much as I possibly can with anybody who has questions about doing, like, whether it's a monthly marathon, or if you want to get into something goofy like competitive eating, I'm happy to give advice. Or you want to do this Tour de Donut race, I'm always happy to meet up and ride with people at these races. And especially if you're fast and you can keep me motivated, and I'm happy to share any tips that you want to get into. Any of these interests that I'm interested in.
That's great. And yeah, I appreciate your time and all your insights, and I wish you the best of luck with everything that you have going on and upcoming on your calendar.
Thanks, man. And maybe one day, you and I can, meet up for a race. You never know. I always come out to your side of the world, a couple times a year.
Absolutely. Let's do it. And that Tour Day donut has me intrigued. I do love donuts and I don't mind time on the bike either. So sounds like a fun event.
Cool. Awesome. It was great. It was great speaking with you. And, again, YasserSalem.com or at YasserSalem, on Twitter is where people can reach me.
Sounds great. Well, hey, thank you.
All right. Take care.
Get all of the links to connect with Yasser in the show notes at usaendurance.com/041. Let us know what you thought of this episode by leaving a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening, and until next time, lace up those shoes, hit the trail, and train hard. Thank you for listening to the Freedom to Run podcast. If you're ready to take your training to the next level and reach your running and fitness goals, we invite you to join the USA Endurance community at usaendurance.com.